issues of America's heart and home.
The views expressed on this program are those of the hosts and guests and are not necessarily those of IRN and its advertisers or affiliates.
Interest, and this is one of the great tragedies of our time, that suddenly we're beginning to find that the credit markets are beginning to dry up, and with this, of course, the world is slipping into recession, and with this, of course, the price of many of the commodities is going up, including gold and silver, because these are very unstable and uncertain financial times. So with that as a background, you pick up the story there as you see it, Ron.
Well, you know, Dr. Stan, you and I for the last 4, 5, 6 years have talked about a common theme, and that is that their whole monetary system is built on a mountain of debt, and that as that debt structure became larger and larger, it became imperative that they keep the system growing, not allow it to ever contract. But, you know, even the greatest magician eventually runs out of rabbits. And so when the dot-com bubble burst, they led us to the real estate bubble, and now the real estate bubble burst, but they had done so many desperate things to keep that bubble going into these subprime loans, and now it's feeding into the whole financial system, and the big banks are taking massive write-offs, and like you said, even this short-term paper is running into trouble. There's no buyers for it, and the interest rates are spiking. In fact, my brother called me from UBS last week and was telling me about some of this 7-day commercial paper in New York City that all the brokerage firms had been selling, and everyone has backed out of it, and they converted them automatically. It was a small print in the writing that this 7-day paper, if there was no buyers for it, would convert to a 25-year bond. So you're starting to see the squeeze play. Can you imagine the people that might have had money in that tied up in that short-term paper, needed it 7 days to pay off a mortgage or some other big thing, and all of a sudden it's tied up. So you're starting to see the troubles just spread throughout the whole system.
And, of course, really what we have, you know, is that we have a lot of our lending agencies are frankly insolvent. I mean, there's all sorts of money out there. But, of course, the major industries are insolvent, and, of course, they're not going to lend any money because they don't know really what their assets are. Well, you go right ahead, Ron. Certainly, we're seeing this, you know, all over, and it's in every aspect of the banking system. We're finding the UBS, which is the Union Bank of Switzerland, the largest bank in Switzerland, one of the largest banks in the world, has already acknowledged it's got write off over $26 billion and has another $26 billion of bad assets, and perhaps even another 26 on top of that, or 30, somewhere about $80 billion of questionable assets. Now, the bank only has a couple of $100 billion in assets, and a lot of these are just not solvent. And this is one of the largest banks in the world. We see Citigroup here in the United States, Merrill Lynch. We see Morgan Stanley, and we see so many of the major banks simply are not solvent any longer. Major lending institutions, a lot of the hedge funds are having real problems. When they were making 30 or 40% a year a couple of years ago, now they're losing 5%, 10%, and a lot of the hedge funds are actually cutting off the ability of people to get their money out of them. In fact, certainly there's going to be a question, is there going to be runs on our banks in this country? And if there were runs on the banks, does the Federal Deposit Insurance Company have enough money to pay them all off? And quite frankly, they do not. So, of course, the only thing we could do would be to simply print more money, have the Federal Reserve System get the Treasury to print more money or create more credit. But that's highly inflationary, and they're in a very difficult position. I mean, which way do you go? Do you want a terrible recession, a depression? Or do you want, of course, to destroy the value of the dollar? Either way, you're going to get into trouble.
Well, that's right. And, of course, as these banking loans and everything implode, that's the very deflation that I was saying they cannot allow to happen, because if it continues much longer, the confidence in the whole system will start to implode. And, of course, when you lose confidence in a confidence game, you got serious problems, and that's basically what our monetary system is. So I would look, I think what you've seen is this first $170 billion stimulus package that they're calling, which is just kind of a bailout package, which may buy them a little time for a month or two. But, you know, the way our economy is, or the way our society is, probably half those people are just going to go out and buy them a new flat-screen TV or some type of electronical appliance, because it's not going to really change their life either way. But I look for them to come out with more and more bailout packages. I think you're going to see them come out with a massive physical stimulus package where the government's going to start rebuilding highways.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Ron Brown. We're really talking about the economic situation and what you're really seeing. Of course, the European banks and the American Federal Reserve System have poured over $1.5 trillion into the market, into the economy, trying to keep it from slipping into recession, and yet European banks and American banks, many of them are really insolvent today. So what does the federal government do? Why, of course, they're going to give everybody a check for $300 or $600, or the vast majority of the people are going to get money with the idea of they'll just spend it. We can spend our way out of this situation we're in today. But the trouble is, you can't spend your way out of it, because, of course, if you get too much money out there, you're going to destroy the value of the dollar. And I was reading a fascinating article in the Wall Street Journal where they kept insisting inflation is 2%. Well, maybe 2.2%. Maybe it may be just a little bit more than that, but it's only 2%. So the Federal Reserve System has a lot of leeway. They don't have to worry about inflation getting out of hand, although there are a few worriers there worried about inflation. Ladies and gentlemen, they're lying to us. I mean, do you really believe that the inflation rate is 2%? Why suddenly the price of pharmaceuticals went up 7.9% this last year, and 6.5% the year before that, and about 6.3% the year before that. And, of course, a lot of people spend an awful lot of money on drugs. Look and see what's happening to the price of wheat and wheat products, of corn and corn products, of dairy products, of meat. Look and see what's happening to the price of oil. And then tell me that, you know, we have 2% inflation, and they're quite frankly lying to the American people. And the thing is that the purpose of the Federal Reserve System is to prevent inflation and give us a stable currency. They're doing just the opposite. Would you agree, Ron, or disagree?
Oh, absolutely. You know, just look at the price of nickel and copper and lead and zinc. You know, lead, not too many years ago, was trading at 22 cents a pound. What is it now? $1.50 a pound? You know, so a lot of these base metals are up 300, 400, 500, 600%. So it's hard to say that we only have 2% inflation when that's the you know, the base products that go into everything we manufacture. So, yeah, inflation's probably running closer to 10, 12, 13%. We know the M3 money supply is running somewhere around 15 to 16%, I understand. And around the world, it's going up a lot faster than that in many countries. So the whole world is having to try to inflate out of this, and it's going to lead to a lack of confidence in all fiat money. And we're starting to see that in the gold and silver markets. You know, gold is, gosh, how much is it up just this year? It's up to $950, $946 today, and I think it started the year somewhere on 800, so gold is probably up 15 to 20%. I know silver's up over 20% just in a month and a half. So people are starting to wake up to the destruction of the currency and the inflation, and they're starting to see gold and silver as the refuge.
Yeah, well, actually, silver hit 18. It closed, I think, pretty close to $18.01 an ounce. Now, I haven't seen it that high in 28, 27 years, something like that.
That's right. It was back in 1980.
Right.
The last time we saw $25 silver. And the flight into the gold and silver is starting to accelerate. And as that happens, then there's going to be a major squeeze play on the available supplies, because, you see, they have created literally trillions and trillions and hundreds of trillions of dollars of paper assets around the globe, and yet most experts would say $15 billion would buy all the bullion silver you could possibly come up in the world. So if you see any type of flight out of paper money into silver, then you could see silver explode. In fact, if you remember what I was saying back in November, Dr. Stan, is that once silver broke through 16, which would be a clean breakout from the May 6 highs, that from that point forward, I was projecting $50 to $100 silver in the next 18 to 24 months. So I'm saying by the year 2010 that you'll see $50 to $100 silver.
Well, of course, this is certainly, you know, not to be unexpected. In fact, the silver may go a lot higher than that. You don't have any idea how high it's going to go, but there's a tremendous upside potential, especially when the traditional ratio of gold to silver has been, silver to gold has been 16 to 1. So, and it was that way for many, many years, and that's about where it got to back about 1980 when silver hit, I guess, what did silver hit? It hit, what, 85?
$52 in a day.
$52 at the same time, while gold hit about 850. So, of course, right now gold's at is about 950, and silver's really way down there, only at $18. So it's got a long way to go if it's going to match what happened back in 1980.
That's right.
Well, are you seeing many people very interested? For our listeners out there who don't know Ron, why, of course, he sells both gold and silver, and I've dealt with him in the past. He's an honorable man, or believe me, he would not be on our program. But yeah, are you seeing people beginning to get interested? Are they saying, oh, gee, I'll wait till it falls back?
You know, it's interesting, Dr. Stan. As you know, I had the back problems and then the surgery in January. So I was pretty much out of, I wasn't really active, just trying to survive, yet I had the biggest month I've had in 7 years. It's really reaching the point where I could sit there and never make a phone call out and do very decent business, because more and more people are waking up And what tells me they're really waking up is when I start getting calls from people that are referred from my existing clients. So a lot of my clients have been trying to refer people to me for the last 3, 4, 5 years, and they'll call me 6 months later and say, well, did so-and-so call? And I said, no. You know, it takes a while for people to wake up, because this is a new game for most people, and they feel very uncomfortable getting into the gold and silver market because they don't understand how it works. So, but now they're getting to the point where fear is starting to set in. They're feeling the squeeze play. They're seeing what's happening to the dollar. They know the government's lying to them about inflation. So there's starting to be a negative view of our future. So people are starting to look for a refuge or something to protect them.
Well, I think a lot of people feel uneasy, too, because after all, it has to be sent through the mail. And people don't understand that registered mail is about as safe as you're going to find anything in this country. And it's certainly a lot safer than a government investment. But, you know, of course, registered mail gets there, and because there are terrible consequences if it doesn't, and it's insured. And so really there's very little to worry about. Have you ever lost anything in the registered mail or certified mail?
In 27 years, there's been two packages lost, one for two 100-ounce bars and I think one for four or five Krugerrands, but in all cases, the insurance paid for it, so... Yeah, that's, you know, that includes thousands upon thousands of shipments. So, yeah, it's a very safe way to go.
And it's, I think people, you have to get sort of used to this is one way to do things, and it's a very efficient means to do it. And you kind of have to begin to think outside the box. Because we are in real financial trouble. The whole financial infrastructure of the United States and the rest of the world is beginning to crumble. And certainly we're even, of course, over in China, they're having problems with their stock market. Their economy is overheated. The banks have been told to cut back on loans, and that's going to slow their economy down. They have to. When you have a fiat money system, you've got to slow down the economy, or why, of course, you will destroy the value of the currency. And people throughout the world in the central banks know the danger of inflation, and they know that they're right now in a box. And no matter what they do, why, they're going to make things worse. And if they lower the interest rates and make money more readily available, they'll have inflation. If they don't do it, they're going to lose the economy. And that's just the way that it sits today. And so many things are happening. I mean, certainly people are defaulting on their student loans. They're defaulting on their credit cards. They're defaulting on their automobile loans. And certainly the lots are full of used vehicles there. People have just walked away from the payments on their car or on their truck, and people are doing the same thing with their homes. The value of the homes decrease. Why? Some people are suddenly realizing that they actually are in a situation where they owe more on their house than the house could actually sell for, and they're just hanging up the keys and walking away. Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And we've got Aaron calling us from Louisiana. So if you have a question or comment for our guest, Ron Powell,
yes,
give us a call, yes, and let's go to Aaron. Hi, Aaron. How are you doing?
Hey, how you doing today, Sam?
I'm doing fine, and you're calling from where in Louisiana?
I'm from Louisiana, North Louisiana.
Okay, how are you listening to us?
I'm listening to y'all on the Internet.
All right, fine. Well, do you have a question or comment?
Yes, I had a comment for both of you. I read a lot of articles on 321gold.com, has a lot of really good investment articles on gold and silver. And they had a article on there where one of the writers had talked about JML Investment Firm. It's an investment firm in Switzerland. They have 21,000 investors worldwide. Where in their portfolios, they're offering the Amero as part of the portfolio in their investment to their clients. They're offering the Amero
as part of
their investment portfolio.
How can they do that when it hasn't been issued yet? The only Amero that are coming out of a private mint. So the Amero,
right,
is not a legitimate currency at the present time.
Right.
They're being put out by private mints, but certainly not by any government.
Yeah, on JML, this investment firm in Switzerland with 21,000 clients, they're offering the Amero in their portfolio for their investors.
Well, but who is minting the Amero?
It's JML. It's an investment, Swiss investment company that is offering the Amero in their portfolio.
Okay, fine.
As
well,
a potential currency that I guess, for an investment in the future. I don't know why, but they're offering it.
Well, I think that it's rather strange they're offering a currency that doesn't exist, but I appreciate your calling. Anything else, Aaron?
That's all. I know Ron Brown, he was talking, he had some back problems. Carrying all that heavy silver around, that'll cause you some back problems sometimes.
Thanks very much, Aaron. Bye-bye.
Take care. Thank you, Stan.
Well, what do you think of that, somebody offering the Amero in a investment portfolio? That sounds a little strange to me, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does, but it kind of indicates that's certainly in the plans of the insiders to create this Amero. How they can, I don't know how they could possibly, you know, I agree with you, I don't know how they could possibly be offering it if it doesn't exist yet. But that is kind of interesting. That's something to check out, isn't it?
Yeah, it sure is. Well, lots of strange things going on. And, you know, certainly over in Switzerland they're having problems. Certainly some of their biggest banks, like Credit Suisse and Union Bank of Switzerland, are having real problems because they had invested in all these loans, and now these loans are not serviceable. A lot of the loans were classified as AAA, but only because... not because of the real value in the loans or the bonds, but because they were guaranteed. And they call them swaps or debentures, or call them what you will. But the people actually bought them, assuming that, well, even if the people who issued the bond didn't pay for it, the insurance company would. And then we suddenly find the insurance company doesn't have any money to make the payments with. And suddenly we begin to see the whole foundation of the whole world monetary system begin to collapse. Do you see this happening?
Absolutely. In fact, I think part of the problem is that, going back to the Ponzi scheme scenario, every time the economy gets in trouble, they cannot allow it to collapse, so they bail it out. So what that ultimately does is it convinces people there's no risk to worry about, because if your investment goes sour, the government's going to be there to bail you out. And so I think even the bankers got caught up with the greed and the quick money of all this creative, you know, structured investment vehicles and everything. And I think you end up with a lot of young whippersnappers in there with their little computers and their models, and they just they're not in touch with reality. So eventually, the Ponzi scheme implodes on itself, and that's what we're seeing now. It's just, you know, when you look back and say, how could intelligent bankers have been involved in these collateralized debt obligations and all these things that were just junk, you know, toxic waste is what they call them, and they should have been able to see through it.
But, of course, they didn't see through it, and, of course, what's going to happen in many of the banks, why, the shareholders are going to end up with absolutely nothing. That's what's happening with the one of the largest banks in Great Britain. It's called Northern Rock. And they had a run on that bank, first time they had a run on a bank in a long time in Great Britain, and the only solution was for the government to take over the bank. And then, of course, what about the bank's assets? Well, of course, the bank's assets are owned by the stockholders, but the stock becomes essentially worthless. And all those people who are holding the stock in Northern Rock Bank are certainly going to lose out. And this, I fear, may happen in these financial institutions all across the world. People really can't believe that a major bank could go bankrupt, but if they have made bad investments, there's no reason in the world that they wouldn't go bankrupt. And if you think that the government may bail out the depositors just to try to preserve the banking system, but they're really not worried about the stockholders. And I really think that before this is over, an awful lot of the investors in hedge funds and in certainly various types of investment companies and in savings and loans and certainly in banks are going to end up with worthless stock. We'll be right back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Ron Brown. And our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And, of course, we like to talk about this, hoping that our listeners will begin to make their preparations and get into a defensive position, because, of course, the people who do not are going to get it. Many of them are going to lose everything they have. And if you're in debt today, you get out any way you have to. Sell whatever you have to, but get out of debt, because if you do not get out of debt, then anything you owe money on is very much in jeopardy today. And, of course, you know what's happening. Of course, when the price of property was going up, an awful lot of people were taking out loans on their home. In other words, they used home equity loans, and they were using their home as a piggy bank. And a home, every time it increased $10,000 in value, why, they borrowed more money on their home, and then they could take a trip, or they could have home improvements, or they could put in a new kitchen or buy a new car. I mean, after all you have to do is just pay the interest on the loan. But what happens when the price of the home declines, as it has in many parts of the country, where homes have gone down 15 or 20%, and they probably have another 25% to go down? These are the areas where prices had gone up very rapidly, and these people have these massive home equity loans and no way to pay them off. And who would want to pay off a loan on a house anyway, when you owed more on the house than the house was worth, and you're looking forward to the price going down? So I think that we're seeing all across America foreclosure signs going up. And, of course, many times when these houses are put up for auction, nobody's bidding on them. That's the frightening thing. And so there are lots of houses out there for sale. And, of course, sometimes there are just no bidders at all. Are you seeing this in your area there, Ron?
Yeah, they just came out with an article in the paper this week, I believe it was, and it was given the percentage of foreclosures. And in Colorado Springs, we were one of the better ones. Is one in 60 homes is in foreclosure, but I think in Denver is one in 45. So you're seeing foreclosures accelerate all over the country. And if you'll recall, Dr. Stan, especially out there in California, when real estate was probably booming more than any other place, a lot of people were taking the equity in their, houses. It had gone from, $200,000 to $600,000, $700,000, $800,000, $1 million, and they were borrowing against that equity and using it to speculate in spec homes. So I used to hear the figure for at least a solid year that 30% of the housing or construction business was building spec. So what you're really doing is building houses for which there really is no demand, and you're assuming the game will just continue to go and you can flip it to a bigger fool. Well, what that means is you've really built a lot more houses that are overhanging the market now, and it's going to take a long while to work those off, especially when you consider that our economy is being squeezed and people are losing their jobs or their incomes are not keeping up with inflation. So every month it gets harder and harder to make ends meet. So where's the money going to come from to take these houses off the market? And I tell you what, the banking system and the government has a tremendous problem trying to bail the system out of this one.
Well, I'm not certain that there's any way that they can bail this system out. I think that it's going to have to contract. I think we're going to have to go into a depression. We're going to have to just simply liquidate the massive amount of debt that's out there, large amounts of money that's out there. It's really only banking interest. It has, or banking entries. It has no inherent value. It is all paper money, and every fiat money system throughout all history has eventually collapsed. And just because we have computers doesn't mean that we can simply repeal the laws of economics, and I think we're on the way into a depression. Nobody wants to talk about it. Now they're talking about stagflation. Stagflation is a recession, inflation, and we certainly have... We have a recession, and we do have inflation. Government's lying to us, but why wouldn't we expect them to lie to us? They want to keep the people happy. In fact, today it was amazing. That stock market was down 120 points, 150 points. And then in the last 30 minutes, the plunge protection team went to work. And, the market went from being behind 150 points or so to closing ahead 60 or 80 points, 90 points, somewhere in there. All manipulation in the last 30 minutes of the day. This is how the thing works. Understand that the government, the plunge protection team, or affectionately known as the working group on markets, why, of course, they just manipulate the stock market. They do this because they know the American people feel happy when they end the week with the stock market up. It's all a matter of perception. Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. We'd love to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, if you agree or disagree, get some advice from Ron. He's a pretty smart guy on this sort of thing. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and of course, as we follow this and watch this whole scenario unfold, it's sort of like mixed emotions. The old analogy of, you know, seeing your brand new Cadillac going over the cliff with your mother-in-law in it. Why, you know, and of course, we don't want to see this system collapse, and yet it has to collapse, because as long as it continues, you know, giving affluence to everybody or so many people, nobody's concerned about what's really behind this whole thing, and nobody's concerned that, you know, about the war. They're not concerned about torture. They're not concerned about the decline in moral values. They're not concerned about what's happening to our children. People are living the good life, and it's only when that good life begins to end and they've got to start wondering where the next meal is coming from, they're going to begin to wonder about the things that are really important in this world, like faith in God and peace on earth and man's compassion towards their fellow man, and really who is manipulating this and who brought this all on. And of course, it's been brought on by our government, by our elected politicians, who have violated the rules of office as far as the Constitution, by the Federal Reserve System, which has violated its mandate to maintain a stable currency, and greed and avarice have created a monster. And that monster now is going to begin to devour the very people who created it. And I really fear that an awful lot of Americans are going to lose everything they've worked their whole life for, anything that is fixed to the dollar, whether it be CDs or bonds, or whether it would be money in the bank, or whether it would be their pension funds or insurance policies, or all these things that we think are give us, you know, a stability. Anything mediated in the dollar is going to be destroyed intentionally by the people who've created a fiat money system, knowing full well that throughout all of history, over a period of thousands of years, every fiat money system has always collapsed, and ours is in the process of collapsing. Go ahead, Ron. Why don't you pick up the story?
Well, you know, in my last newsletter that I wrote back in November, I'm convinced that the next shoe to drop, and it's going to be the big shoe, is going to be in the bond market. You see, the bond market is the foundation for our whole financial system. The bond market dwarfs the equity market. So if the bond market ever starts to unravel, then this whole system starts to implode on itself. And you already seen it. You know, it started off with these subprime loans going into the mortgage bonds, and now you're starting to see it in some of the other paper, you know, the junk bonds, the corporate bonds, the municipal bonds are starting to suffer a little bit.
Oh, that's right. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess this is Ron Brown. And Ron, why don't you get your telephone number? You don't have a website, do you? So get your telephone number out there anyway.
Okay, it's 1-800-595-0561. That's 1-800-595-0561.
All right, fine. And of course, Ron is in the gold and silver business, and Ron does support Radio Liberty, but we support him too, and we've worked very closely with him on personal matters. We think that he's an honest man, or he certainly wouldn't be on Radio Liberty. In fact, he was one of our featured speakers at our last conference here last October. And we really appreciated his coming all the way out here from Colorado Springs to be with us. And certainly what he had to say was very well received. Well, Rod, you were telling us about your latest newsletter. In fact, I don't think you sent me one of them. I don't recall getting it. So maybe
you didn't get it, Dr. Stan. I'll be glad to send you one.
But you were talking about the bond market. Would you repeat what you said? Because I think it's so important for people to understand that the bond market is beginning to come unraveled. So pick the story up.
Well, when they created the Federal Reserve System, that allowed the Congress and the government to spend more money than it brought in taxes, and they would finance those deficits by just borrowing money from the Federal Reserve System, and they were issuing Treasury bonds to fund their deficits. So every year, as this debt structure gets larger and larger and larger, it becomes more unsustainable. And the bond market is the foundation for this whole financial system, because if you really think about it, we don't have any money today. Everything, even the dollar bill, is a Federal Reserve note, and a note is a debt obligation. It's not money. So the whole system is built on this mountain of debt. Now, the bond market functions, and in fact, historically, in fact, the title of my letter was Bond Market, Inflation Vigilante or Not. It was a question mark. Because historically, the bond market would stop inflation in its tracks because bond investors will not continue to buy bonds, let's say, paying 5% today once they understand inflation is running at 10%. So they would force interest rates higher to make up for the devaluation of the currency. And if that happens when interest rates rise, then the existing bonds in the market go down in value, because who wants to buy a bond that's paying 5% for the next 30 years when they can go into the marketplace and buy one that's paying 10%. So that would force the bond market down, which would be the very deflation we've been saying they cannot allow. And of course, if the bond market craters and interest rates spike, then that's a double whammy on what's left of our economy. So what we're really seeing now is that the government pulls out all the stops and all the shenanigans and all the creative ways of keeping interest rates low so they can keep this inflationary bubble going. But the reality is they're running out of time, and that the people that have been holding our bonds are starting to feel very uncomfortable with them, because they know inflation is going much higher than the government admits. And so they are now wanting to get rid of these bonds and these paper assets that are not keeping up with the cost of living or the devaluation of the dollar.
Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY. If you have a question or comment for our guest, Ron Brown. But what most people don't understand is how the system works, how the capitalist system works. And so many corporations work on borrowed money. I mean, they build new plants with borrowed money. They operate on a day-to-day basis on borrowed money. And, of course, then they have to get enough money in, number one, to pay the interest on the money that they borrowed. And then, of course, the profit would go to the stockholders of the company. But this, in essence, is how the corporations work. And so many of them have to keep borrowing money simply to pay the payroll. And then, of course, they hope that down the line they're going to be able to sell their products and get the money back again. But, of course, what happens if the money in the bond market begins to dry up? And that, of course, is the frightening thing, and it is happening. And as you watch, if you're reading the Wall Street Journal, as I am very carefully, you're finding that sometimes when people want to, renew their bonds, especially these that are being sold on a regular basis, long-term borrowing, but they're, of course, they're selling it on short-term auctioning, and suddenly they find out that instead of getting their money at 3% or 4%, they're going to have to pay 15% or 20%. How do you do that when your profit margin is only going to be 10%? You can't do it. And, of course, increasingly, more and more of our corporations or more and more of our major our cities and our states, they want to borrow money to operate. The school districts want to borrow money to operate, but what happens if they got to pay 10 or 15% or 20% interest? How long can you do that? And, of course, you can't, because, of course, they're going to have to get the money from the people, and the people aren't going to vote, any tax bonds that are going to have that sort of an interest rate on them. And then the people aren't going to be able to pay their taxes either. And, of course, more and more homes may very well go into foreclosure simply because the taxes aren't paid. So we've started on a downhill run with the economy. Well, let's go to Luke, who's calling us from New York. And again, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Hi, Luke. How are you doing tonight?
Good.
Are you calling from upstate New York or whereabouts?
Yep, upstate New York.
Okay, you're listening to us on the radio up there? You listen to us on the shortwave or internet?
On the radio.
Okay, go right ahead. Do you have a question or comment?
are you saying that the money people have in the bank may not be safe?
I'm saying that the money people have in the bank is losing value because of inflation. And what people do not understand is that you may have $1,000 in the bank or $100. Let's say you have $1,000 in the bank. When you have an inflation, say 10% a year, that means that that $1,000 loses value $100 a year. Go ahead, pick up. How would you respond to that, Ron?
Well, just take the stock market as an example. In year 2000, the stock market peaked out at around 12,000. So if you had your money in the stock market today, you could argue that, well, it's still worth 12,000. But what has happened to the cost of living? The dollar has dropped 40% against the other currencies in the world. So while your stock has maintained its nominal value, in real terms, it's losing very fast. It's what I call the silent crash, because people always think in nominal terms and they don't realize those dollars buy less and less and less.
So I'm sorry.
Go ahead. They're just being bankrupted very quietly without realizing it. And unfortunately, too many people are not going to wake up to what's happening to them until it's too late.
So the general theme is people should be stockpiling silver?
You should be putting your money into things that are of inherent value that will not be destroyed by inflation. Would you agree with that, Ron?
Absolutely. And, of course, real estate is a bubble in the sense that real estate is not a tangible. It is, but it really is a mortgage market, and most of the real estate is leveraged to the hilt. So that bubble is popping, and even though you would think of real estate as a tangible, in many areas of the country, it's losing value dramatically.
What you want to do, Luke, is be in a currency that's not losing value or that is actually increasing value. And,
right.
Of course, some people have suggested the Swiss currency. Some people have suggested the Chinese currency, although I certainly wouldn't want to do that. Some people say the Canadian currency is a lot more solid and is not going to be destroyed as readily as the American dollar. In fact, the Canadian dollar has gone from about a dollar, about, I think, 60, 65 cents, almost to par with the dollar over the last year and a half. So you have to listen to our programs, and you want to diversify, diversify, diversify. Those are the three rules of investing.
All right.
Of course, gold and silver is the real money. Gold and silver is the biblical money. It's historical money. The rest of them are just currencies, which are backed by nothing, because there is no currency in the world today that's backed by gold.
Anything else, Luke?
No, except it'd be nice if maybe you could repeat that number. The gentleman that sells gold and silver.
1-800-595-0561.
One more
Thank
time.
1-800-595-0561.
Okay, thank you.
God bless. Bye-bye. Okay, fine. Now let's go to Sarah, who's also calling from New York. And, again, the number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California, 464-8295. And, Sarah, are you in upstate New York, too?
Yes, I am.
Okay, and what station are you listening to?
I don't know.
Okay, fine. Well, that's all right. As long as you're listening, that's the important thing. Do you have a question or comment?
Well, yeah, my question is, I have cash in a money market fund. I've already called and left my number for Mr. Brown to call me back Monday morning. How does it work if you have gold and silver and you want to go to the grocery store or something? Are they going to take that as you would spend dollars now, today?
No, it's the same as if you have an IBM stock or any other investment. You can't go into the grocery store and spend your stock. You have to convert it back to cash. The way to look at it is that gold and silver is your store of wealth. You don't want to store your wealth in a currency that's depreciating because it purchases less each year.
I understand. So what you're saying is keep some dollars so I could still shop, even though it would be probably take a lot more dollars.
Sure, you have to keep some money in cash just for your day-to-day transactions. It's just you don't want to keep your life savings in dollar-denominated investments that are depreciating in value.
Okay, I've never bought gold or silver, so I don't really know how it works other than you send it in the mail, and I got it somewhere stashed away, I don't know, in the safe deposit box or something. And then if I need it, I can convert it back to dollars.
I don't think you'll ever have any trouble converting it into dollars because, believe
me,
this has been
stable. Well, I mean, would I do that locally, or is that something I would have to go back through Mr. Brown?
Well, you can call me back, or there's lots of people that deal in it. The main thing you want to do is find someone that you can trust to be fair with you and give you a reasonable price. And there's a lot of people out there that'll just try to rip you off. So you'll learn that as you get in and understand how the market works a little bit. It's just when you're first trying to get in that you're just kind of scary because you really don't know how the game is played.
No, I don't. I have no clue. And I can't. I'm old, and I can't afford to get burnt, and I can't afford mistakes. I'm well past my high-earning years, and so this is it.
Well, look, Sarah, one reason we do what we do is we're trying to get people like you to begin making preparation for the difficult times that lie ahead. And I always say diversify. I mean, don't be all in one thing, but...
I am very diversified, but everything you're telling me is going to go in the toilet.
Amen.
Everything
that.
I've got out there is dollar-dependent.
Well, then you want to get into some things that are not dollar-dependent. Okay?
Right.
Okay, God bless, and thanks very much.
All right, thank you.
Bye, and let's go to Bill calling from Arkansas. And again, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Hi, Bill, how are you doing?
Doing good.
You have a question or comment?
Yes, I do. I have bought silver, bought gold, bought coins, freeze-dried food, done all that stuff, and paid off everything, paid the farm off, debt-free. Still have about $40,000 in a CD, and it's simply because I really don't know what else to do with it. I mean, you can only buy so much of this stuff before the basement fills up, if you know what I mean.
I know, of course.
But I'm wondering, I know that it's losing ground every year, daily, practically, and I'm wondering if it's safe, and I'm wondering what your guest thinks that he would do if he was in that position.
All right, that's a good question. Ron, what would you do?
You know, that's always a tough question. It used to be the standard answer or question people would ask is, what percentage of my wealth should I put in gold and silver? And kind of the knee-jerk reaction that all the people would give is 10 to 15%. Well, we're at a point now where it doesn't take a rocket scientist to see that the dollar system that we're under is unraveling very, very quickly. So at this point, what percentage do you put in gold and silver? And it's more, if you're not putting it in gold and silver, what else can you put it into? It has to be something tangible, something real. You can't leave it in CDs and T-bills and stuff that are being are going to be destroyed in this coming crash. So you just have to find some way to put it into something that's tangible and real. Maybe that's more gold, maybe it's more silver, I don't know. You know, maybe it's some real estate in the country.
Already have the real estate in the country.
Yeah, well, it sounds like you've covered all your bases. Now you just...
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I've bought gold and silver 3, 4, 5 times. I bought some silver back when it was $4 an ounce. I'm very grateful.
I'm glad you did, true.
But, and I've bought, you know, cases of toilet paper. I've covered all the bases. And so, really, I don't know what else to get.
Well, you could always get gold or silver stocks, but you have to be very careful because there's sharks in the water, but they're... I mean,
over my head, I'm sure.
All right, of course, there are people who are pretty smart on that, but I think that probably the gold and silver stocks will go up. You may want to get more in the way of gold and silver. You might want to invest in stocks, and although any time you do, there's always a problem, but I think they're going to go a lot higher, especially when people suddenly realize what's happening. At least this is what's happened, you know, in the past, and certainly during the Great Depression, my Homestead mine, which was the... a leading gold mine at that time in the United States, just went right through the sky. What are your thoughts on that, Ron?
Absolutely. Of course, it's when you're buying in a mining company or shares, you're betting on a lot more than just the rise in the price of gold or silver. You're betting on the integrity and the honesty and the competence of the management. You're betting on the politics of the nation that mine is in. You're betting on... nature, if you have a cave-in in a mine, that's going to shut down a mine. So there's a lot of variables that could hurt a gold or silver mine, so you have to be very careful in selecting them. But by the same token, they give you a leverage play on the rise in gold. For example, if a company is mining gold and it's costing them $300 an ounce when gold is at $400, then they're making, 33% return. But if gold went from 400 to 500, that doubles their profits. But the gold only went up 25%. So you get a leverage play. The earnings increase much, much faster as gold goes up. So the stocks can go up, 5, 10, 20-fold if you pick the right ones.
And, of course, the other thing is diversify. If you do go in the stocks, diversify them. Don't put all your eggs in one basket, because there's always that guy out there with a big foot who's going to step on the basket. But you got to diversify. It sounds like you're doing pretty well and you're in pretty good shape. But I say, if there's anything, unless you need that $40,000 immediately, why, there's certain ways you could invest it and perhaps it would grow. But nothing is sure in this world, that's for certain.
Do you think it's reasonably safe in a something like a CD I could get it next week, I just have to pay a little penalty. But I mean, is that just outright stupid to have it there, or do you think it's okay when I have all the other bases covered?
What do you think, Ron?
Well, you got to keep enough money in the banking system to take care of your day-to-day needs, So whatever you think you need, plus a little reserve, you need to keep in maybe your CD. I don't particularly like CDs because
it's long.
But, for example, silver's up 20% in the last month and a half, so if it had taken a 1.5% or 2% penalty to get out of it to put it in the silver's rising much faster than that little small penalty you're going to pay to get it out.
I think the big thing is that we're going to see increasingly the value of money destroyed by inflation. That's the thing you have to really be concerned about. And right now, inflation is running 10 to 11%. If they continue doing what they're doing and don't change, why, probably by next year it'll be running 15 to 16%. It doesn't take long to wipe out the value of their $40,000. Thanks very much for calling, Bill.
Thanks.
And I think you're in good shape. You're a lot better shape than most people are.
Yes, and I'm very grateful for that, too. I just was current concerned if I turned it all into metals, I'd have a wheelbarrow full of metals,
All right. Okay. Well, you have to make those decisions. Nobody can make them for you.
Yep. If you want to call me offline tomorrow or something, or next Monday, I'll give you maybe some brokers that I can lead you to on the gold and silver shares.
Thank you.
God bless. And let's go to Charles calling from New York. Charles, you have a question.
Yes, hi, Dr. Stan and your guests. Thank you for taking my call. Just wanted to know if your guests could speak a little bit about the FDIC, which covers...
What about the FDIC, the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, that guarantees the deposits of every American who has money in the bank?
Right, and I'm concerned about the fact that they even stated they've never covered more than $175,000. At a time, and banks are insolvent with millions of depositors. I don't know if they even prepared for what's coming. They were given a little warning of that on their website. I'll hang up and listen to your guest.
Okay, fine. Thanks very much. And I think that's a very legitimate question on Charles's part. What are your thoughts on that? Do you think the FDIC could just run out of money as some of our banks began to implode?
Well, I haven't seen any statistics in a while, but the last time I heard statistics, they had about a penny and a half for each dollar that was being insured. So it's more of a good time, Charlie, umbrella to create the illusion that your money's protected, when in the reality, if you have a major crisis, there's not nearly enough money to back it. I think you could depend on maybe the government running the printing press to pay that off, because if that fails, then you destroy all confidence in the system.
Yeah, of course, but then if they do that, they destroy the value of the dollar. So
then it becomes hyperinflation.
Right.
So either way, it's not an answer. There is no fixing this problem now. It's too far gone, and it has to run its course. Unfortunately,
hold that thought. We're going to have to go to Eileen here in Ohio, and well, this is Dr. Stan. We've got old Eileen, the last caller for the evening. Eileen, do you have a quick question for us? We're just about out of time.
Yes, I do. My husband is covered under an annuity and a pension, with the whole group on the union. What would happen if the banks did crash?
You're talking about what would happen to the pension fund or the annuity?
Both of them, right.
All right. Well, Ron, how would you respond to that?
Well, the pension plan, you know, the pension plans are invested in something.
Uh-huh.
Usually they're invested in bonds and things like that. Unfortunately, a lot of them were invested in these CDOs and mortgage-backed securities that have gone sour. So, yeah, if we go into a real crash, the money that's going to pay for that pension could dry up, and you'd see a major crisis in that regard, too.
You know, did you say that your husband has an annuity?
Yes, sir.
All right, remember, that's fixed in dollars, and, of course, that annuity could be wiped out very, very rapidly as we get into an inflationary spiral. And right now, with inflation running 10%, the annuity is losing about 10% a year. If we go to 15 or 20% inflation, why, it'll be wiped out at that rate. So if there's any way you can get out of something that is fixed to the dollar, which is decreasing or losing value rapidly, I would look at the other alternatives. I don't know how you can do it, but be concerned and prepare for difficult times is all I can tell you.
Thank you so much for all your information.
God bless. Thanks so much.
Bye-bye.
Well, Ron, I'm going to have to let you go. We're out of time. It's been a great evening, and one more time, get your telephone number out.
That's 1-800-595-0561. 1-800-595-0561.
God bless. Bye-bye.
It was a pleasure to be with you, Dr.
Oh, okay. Dan. Always good to have you here. Well, certainly for our listeners, let me suggest we've written newsletters on a lot of these things, and we have two pamphlets we've written. One is called The History of Money, and they're very inexpensive. Then, of course, there's Financial Meltdown. They're each compilations of five of our newsletters. And then, of course, we have given a talk. It's called The Financial Tsunami. And if I do say so, I think it covers very well everything that's coming to pass today. As we move into the perfect financial storm with the hedge funds and with the derivatives and the carry trade and certainly with the oil crisis and with so many of these senior people, the baby boomers coming online and starting to take out their Social Security, you have to understand that all of these things are coming together at one time, and this is what you call a perfect financial storm or a financial tsunami. If you'd be interested in seeing our DVD, and it comes with a syllabus, we recommend the syllabus. It'll give you tremendous insight into what is going on and what you must do to look after yourself. Because believe me, before this is over, I think the vast majority of the people in the United States are going to be impoverished, and many are going to lose their homes and their automobiles and their jobs and their life savings, at least the value of their savings. And you may have an annuity. You may have a pension fund. But if the dollars you get back are worth only 10 cents on the dollar that was put in, or when bread goes to $10 a loaf, I mean, how long are you going to survive when gasoline is at $10 a gallon? Understand the ravages of inflation, and that's why we have several books. One of them is called The Federal Reserve Conspiracy by our good friend Anthony Sutton. And then, of course, we have the book Fiat Money, Inflation in France, two little books. They're both small, easy to read, but they contain a great deal of information. Now, hopefully one day soon we'll have Ed Griffin's wonderful book, The Creature from Jekyll Island, but the book's out of print now. We were selling 20 of those a week here just a few days ago, and till we ran out of them, and we hope to have them in again by the first of next month. But when they come in, if you haven't read The Creature from Jekyll Island, you really need to. So remember our telephone number. It's 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage is radioliberty.com. And you can listen to our programs there live 3 hours a day. You can listen to our archive programs or MP3. You can listen to the feed to the satellite, which has other programs on it, 9 hours a day for Radio Liberty and 9 hours for Joyce Riley. And then pray for America, but pray for Radio Liberty, please. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests. And, well, for the next hour, our guest is William Grigg, formerly the senior editor of the New American Magazine, and now, of course, writing and doing radio programs, and has his own blog spot, but always a wonderful source of information on what's going on in contemporary America. William, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me, Dr. Stan.
Always a pleasure. What are we going to talk about tonight?
First of all, I think I should apologize to you for leaving you high and dry yesterday afternoon. I had to run my older daughter. I have two daughters. The older of the two is 5 and the younger is 3. And my older daughter, Katrina, had a really nasty bout of strep throat and the temperature of about 103 degrees. And so I had to run her into the walk-in clinic yesterday, which is why I was absent from our appointed conversation yesterday. I wanted to apologize for that. She's doing a little bit better today, but still having a really rough time of it.
I'm so glad she is. Well, don't feel you have to apologize at all. I mean, taking care of your family is number one. And,
oh,
and besides that, that gives me an opportunity to just do an open line program. And so the program worked out fine. But I've forgotten whether we got Charlotte Isabey on that or no. I guess we had Charlotte on today. Anyway, don't worry about it. It always works out. But we missed having you, and of course we're so glad you can be with us tonight.
Well, thank you.
Is she doing better though?
She is doing better, but it's like I said, a pretty nasty case of strep, and it takes several days for that type of thing to be abated somewhat. But hopefully by Sunday she'll be fit and ready for church. At least that's my hope. And we'll just have to see if her infection cooperates. But
fine. Will you go right ahead?
Yeah, with respect to the developments of the world that I think are worthy of our attention, you know the axiom that a lot of investors follow, a lot of contrarian investors, particularly those who are involved in trading or trafficking in gold and silver precious metals, like to say that by the time something hits the mainstream news, when it becomes common knowledge that an investment's a good investment, it's probably peaked, and you're probably at a point where you should sell. And in terms of information with respect to our descent into a police state, I don't think that same principle works the same way that it does with respect to investment. By the time something becomes common knowledge in the political realm, when a society is so far along the road to tyranny that people start talking about it in common conversation, you can read about it in the open press, the non-specialized media, and things of that sort, we're at a really dangerous point. It's not a case of the malady of tyranny starting to go into remission. It's a case of it becoming obvious enough that people who are not absorbed in the struggle for freedom suddenly understand that something ominous is going on. There's a case of that sort in the San Francisco Chronicle a couple of weeks ago, Monday, February 4th, there was an op-ed piece, which is just now getting some attention in the blogosphere. It was an op-ed piece co-written by Lewis, I believe his name is Saylor, and Dan Hamburg. Dan Hamburg is a former congressman. They're officials with a group called Voice of the Environment. And the piece is entitled Rule by Fear or Rule by Law, and it starts off with a quote from Winston Churchill from November 21st of 1943, and that quote really could have been something that would have been perfectly at home in my book, Liberty and Eclipse, where it talks about the role of the tyrannical executive in bringing about a full-scale police state. Churchill said the following, and I quote, "The power of the executive to cast a man into prison without formulating any charge known to the law, and particularly to deny him the judgment of his peers, is in the highest degree odious and is the foundation of all totalitarian government, whether Nazi or communist." Then after citing this epigram, this terrifying epigram...
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment. Go right ahead.
After citing this terrifying epigram from Churchill talking about the fact that an arbitrary executive with the discretionary power to imprison a man without legal charges of due process is the hallmark of every totalitarian regime. These authors in this piece from the San Francisco Chronicle go on to enumerate some of the things you and I have talked about for a number of months now. For instance, the no-bid contract to Kellogg, Brown, and Root to be prepared to build detention camps at undisclosed locations, purportedly to deal with the problem of illegal immigrants in this country. But, of course, when you build detention camps, you've got a multiple-use facility. And when you have the government putting out a contract to build detention camps, obviously they intend to fill them with somebody. The authors here talk about the fact that Section 1042 of the 2007 National Defense Authorization Act, a section entitled Use of the Armed Forces in Major Public Emergencies, now I quote from the article, gives the executive the power to invoke martial law. For the first time in more than a century, the president is now authorized to use the military in response to a natural disease, natural disaster, a disease outbreak, a terrorist attack, or any other condition in which the president determines that domestic violence has occurred to the extent that state officials cannot maintain public order. And, of course, the same measure gives the president the ability to call out the National Guard as his own Praetorian Guard and deploy them within the boundary of the United States, within the borders of the United States, once again, at his beck and call, to enforce his orders as the law. So you're basically creating, once again, a Praetorian Guard. The authors of this piece talk about the Military Commissions Act of 2006, the effects that that has on habeas corpus and the right to a jury trial, National Security Presidential Directive 51, a continuity of government provision which gives the president, or would give the president in appropriate circumstances, powers akin to martial law, the creation here, or the proposed creation of a national commission on violent radicalization and homegrown terrorism, and the corresponding measure before the House that would create this commission for the purpose of subjecting to scrutiny internal dissidents and other so-called radicals as a potential source of terrorism. They go in through these two authors go step by step, piece by piece, in talking about the infrastructure of a totalitarian police state and how these things are all in place. And once again, the most remarkable thing about this, apart from the fact that one of the co-authors is a former congressman, is the fact that this was in the San Francisco Chronicle. And it's once again an illustration of the fact that what has been discussed in the so-called fever swamps, which is to say among those of us who make a priority of observing what's going on and putting it up against the standard of the Constitution and examining with an eye toward history.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Wyndham is talking about an article that recently appeared in the San Francisco Chronicle by a former congressman and by another writer. And of course, what they're talking about is the Military Commission Act, the Homeland, the National Security Presidential Directive number 51. And all of these things allow for the establishment of a tyrannical state in America. And the president can declare martial law at any time he wants, for as long as he wants, without the permission of Congress, and the justification is, well, whatever he says it is. And he now could, of course, call out the National Guard without the permission of state governors as a Praetorian Guard and to establish a dictatorship in America. And people say that couldn't happen here. Well, obviously, there's some people who think it could. And certainly, I know William thinks it could. I know I think it could. And certainly, the writers of this article in the San Francisco Chronicle think it could. And what's so amazing is that it would appear in, of all places, the San Francisco Chronicle, a traditionally very liberal newspaper. But, of course, every once in a while you're going to get some truth there, and I agree with everything you've said, William.
Well, the really uncanny thing about this is that, once again, you have a very statist publication. San Francisco Chronicle is notorious for being very statist. Most of the establishment left in this country objects to what the Bush administration is doing only in terms of specific application, and they don't object in principle to the accumulation of powers in the executive. They don't object in principle to an international policy, a foreign policy of rampant intervention, and a domestic foreign policy of intervention by government in the economy. What they object to would be the specific uses to which these policies are put and the specific beneficiaries. They would prefer to be enriching a different set of constituencies, for instance. They might prefer to carry out an interventionist foreign policy that would be more overtly humanitarian, or at least would describe itself as such. That's sort of Barack Obama's point of view. He very famously said before the Chicago, I believe the, now the Chicago World Affairs Council. It used to be called the Chicago Council on Foreign Relations. They changed their name so as to avoid confusion with the Council on Foreign Relations, the more familiar group headquartered in New York City. But Mr. Obama made a speech before them, however they're named, 3 or 4 years ago, in which he said he didn't really object so much to the idea of foreign wars and foreign intervention, just thought they should be more intelligently staged and more thoughtfully designed. And so where in 1999, 2000, you had George W. Bush criticizing the Clinton administration for policing the world and promising a more humble foreign policy, and that being accepted as a campaign promise of Mr. Bush's to distinguish himself from Mr. Clinton in terms of being perhaps not so promiscuous in the use of military force abroad, yet Mr. Bush turned out to be very much an interventionist of the classic stripe. And if Mr. Obama, as many people anticipate, is elected our next president, chances are he will be very much an interventionist of a slightly different hue, but in terms of his specific cluster of interests. And he'd probably be more multinationalist than George W. Bush, be a little bit closer in execution to the United Nations than the Bush administration appears to be. And he'd be, of course, perhaps a more intelligent, more articulate, more soothing presence as a president. That's his chief calling card right now, is the fact that he has a great deal of personal charm. He's a wonderful speaker, and he appears to be a more rational and more deferential person than George W. Bush. But if he's elected, he'd be part of the same retinue, both foreign and domestic. And chances are he would take these instruments of power that have been created and refined during the Bush administration, and he would probably use them just as ruthlessly as George W. Bush would be using them. So it doesn't really matter whether we have a Republican or a Democrat. It doesn't really matter what the personality of the chief executive would be. By virtue of the fact that these powers have been accumulated in the office of the presidency, creates a very high degree of possibility that we would see our country mutate into something of a classic police state. Whether or not we have a clean and reasonable election this November and we have a transition of power, the fact is the power will still remain dangerously concentrated in the office of the chief executive. And that's a perspective that publications like the San Francisco Chronicle generally aren't all that congenial to, because they see nothing amiss in that arrangement. But the fact that they were willing to carry this op-ed piece is a dramatic illustration of the fact that I believe what we've been talking about with a great deal of concern for many months and in our separate ways for many, many years is now part of the common conversation. That's a healthy development in a sense. It's good that people are at least willing to talk about this and that we still have at least the nominal freedom to do so. In a way, it's an even more troubling development because it means that the disease has become so rampant and so obvious that now people who wouldn't otherwise be inclined to talk about these things with a great deal of concern are now doing so. And another good illustration of the same principle of the accumulation of power and the politicization of our so-called justice system comes from another unexpected source, and that's Colonel Morris Davis, the Air Force officer who had been the chief prosecutor at Guantanamo Bay until last October. He resigned in October, and he had been very outspoken in his belief that Guantanamo Bay houses the worst of the worst, and many of them are terrorists and unlawful enemy combatants who deserve the death penalty. And now he's volunteering to be a defense witness in the event that there are actual trials by military commission, as we have been told there will be sometime later this year. He's willing to do this in the case of Mr. Hamdan. Mr. Hamdan is one of the U.S. citizens or people who have U.S. nationality by birth, who was accused of being Osama bin Laden's driver. The reason why Colonel Davis is willing to do this is he believes that this enterprise has been thoroughly rigged for political reasons. He recalls being told by a superior that, quote, we can't have acquittals, we've got to have convictions. And he attests that last year he was told that they would have a rush to have trials sometime this year before the election as a way of influencing the election. And now we have the Bush administration just in the last week and a half or so saying that they're going to put on trial 6 people accused of involvement in the 9/11 conspiracy, which brought about the death of roughly 3,000 innocent people on 9/11. They would be tried, and if convicted, they would face the death penalty. And now you've got the fellow who's the former chief prosecutor there volunteering to be a defense witness because he says that, that what they're creating in Guantanamo is not an enterprise in justice, but an enterprise in political manipulation of public opinion. That's even more shocking than the San Francisco Chronicle article because of the identity and former occupation, former assignment, rather, of the person involved. Last June, if I remember correctly, he published an op-ed. I think it was probably ghostwritten for him and published under his signature in the New York Times entitled The Guantanamo I Know, in which he defended Guantanamo Bay as a detention facility and military commissions as a form of applied judicial judicial activity. He defended them as legitimate tribunals in that op-ed. And then in September, he resigned, claiming that the process had become politicized, and now he's so completely disenchanted with what happened, he's actually willing to help the defense here.
Well, I think what he's basically saying, he actually, there's an article in the Wall Street Journal in the last day or so, where he has actually said, look, he's all in favor of the Military Commission
mm-hmm.
Act, but
yeah.
what they're doing is circumventing the restrictions in the Military Commission Act that made certain that people would get an honest trial. Now, I didn't know there were any stipulations there that made certain they would get an honest trial, but apparently this former commander at Guantanamo felt that there were certain things in the Military Commission Act that would prevent simply this being a kangaroo court, and he said
mm-hmm.
they've done away with that, and now, of course, they're going to just go ahead and convict these people. There is no chance of acquittal, even if they're innocent.
Mm-hmm.
And that was really, I think this offended his sense of justice, and I applaud him for having
yeah.
the courage to step out, and especially because he may very well have destroyed his military career by telling the truth.
Yeah, that's my perception as well. Institutionally, there are no checks and balances, and there are no guarantees in the military commission system that would ensure a fair trial. But there are provisions that would ensure at least the appearance of a fair trial and that would provide some restraints on at least the ability to conduct a barrelhead, a summary hearing that would result in a foreordained verdict. And I think that is something that this colonel thought was worthwhile. I think he believed that, Colonel Davis believed that at least if they had some kind of institutional restrictions on the way that the tribunals were operated, they would achieve some semblance of justice, at least as practiced in a military setting. And it's important to point out, once again, something that you mentioned, Dr. Stan, and that is that this individual is convinced that there are people in Guantanamo who are deserving of the death penalty. I don't know whether or not that's true. It's just that as a military officer, he believes that the application of the powers contained in the Military Commissions Act is so offensive to any semblance of Western justice that he wants nothing to do with them. And that underscores a very important point about all these developments we're talking about, the undermining of habeas corpus, the accumulation of power in the executive. Whether we have brought it up, but warrantless wiretapping, that's another big issue that needs to be touched upon here. There are, in each of the provisions dealing with each of these abuses of power, provisions and assurances and promises intended to palliate our outrage and to provide us with some sense that there are restraints. But the people who have written these things into law assume that they aren't going to be governed even by the letter of the measures that they have railroaded through Congress or that they have issued as executive decrees. They see these as the starting point. When they're authorized to do something, they believe that they can do that much and no less than that, but that they can do more than what they've been permitted to do in the laws or the guidelines or executive policies that have been promulgated for public consumption, because these people believe basically in a totalitarian concept as government. You know, government can do anything that the people exercising government power consider to be appropriate, irrespective of its impact on the rights of the innocent.
And, of course, what they want to do is have special trials that do not follow American law or constitutional law. They want to put them under the military, and, of course, then they can do whatever they want to. And these are kangaroo courts, unfortunately, because the outcome is predetermined. In fact, according to the colonel who had been in charge there, he was told, we will not have any acquittals. After all, we've had these people here for so long. If we were to acquit any of them, how could we explain it?
Exactly.
And so there will be no acquittals. This was the commanding general in charge of what's going on today. Does that sound like American justice? Well, I think we all ought to be concerned. Whether we like the people there or not, doesn't matter. It's the destruction of the judicial system.
You know,
right
what,
ahead.
What makes America unique in world history is not merely the fact that we were blessed with an unprecedented and incomparable allotment of natural riches. I mean, we have a wonderfully blessed country in terms of every variety of raw material that could be usefully refined and deployed through the application of human ingenuity. There are other countries that are similarly blessed, if not so extravagantly. If you take a look at a country like Russia or a country like Brazil, there are plenty of countries that have expansive and variegated blessings in terms of timber and raw materials and mineral wealth, and agricultural wealth. There are a lot of places where people could live very well if their governments were better. We were uniquely blessed, however, in terms of the heritage that we have of liberty under law and the Anglo-Saxon concept of limiting the power of government so as to protect the God-given rights of the individual, to emancipate individual creativity, to make the most of the tremendous blessings we've been given. And what made America unique, once again, is the idea that our country, uniquely in history, was blessed with a founding generation and a governmental charter which was based on this idea of God-given individual rights and a government that was a servant of the individual. That's something which has taken root to a greater or lesser extent in only a handful of countries in history, and ours was the only one that started off from that proposition. Now, bereft of that, having that taken away, we find ourselves in exactly the same situation that some of these other countries that I've described find themselves in. Russia would be an immensely wealthy country if it hadn't been under the iron heel of despotism for centuries leading up to its descent into outright satanic totalitarianism in 1917. They are still a very mineral and energy wealthy country. They have tremendous assets in terms of timber and agriculture, and they have a government that is just an undisguised gang of thieves. Something similar could be said with respect to Brazil. And now the United States is becoming a kleptocracy, a government run by thieves, very much on the post-Soviet Russian model. So we've had our constitutional protection stripped away from us, and we find ourselves more or less at the mercy of people who are just as amoral and just as rapacious as the people who are running the former Soviet Union. And what we're seeing right now is that we're being laid bare to be strip-mined in an almost literal sense by the foreign investors to whom our ruling elite have turned to underwrite their profligacy in terms of building this immense military-industrial complex that has been devoted to this demented imperial foreign policy, on the one hand, and also to maintain the redistribution of state within our own borders. And the crisis that started out with the so-called subprime mortgages that has now metastasized into not just the mortgage industry, but also into other varieties of lending. There have been discussions in the press, for instance, with respect to the fact that the next subprime lending crisis is going to be in the automotive loan industry, where you had pretty much the same kind of a deal, no money down, extravagantly generous credit for people who were dubious recipients of that credit. Those loans are all going bad. You have repos accumulating at an unprecedented rate, but you also have student loans going bad. You have loans of all kinds going bad, and that's the sort of thing that happens when you have this maldistribution of resources and the classic...
Hold that thought. We'll be right back in just a moment with William Green. Well, Dr. Stan, William Grigg was just talking about, of course, what's happening. What we're beginning to see is the auto loans going bad. People were allowed to buy cars, nothing down, make your first payment in 3 months, something like this, low interest rates. And of course, these people couldn't afford to buy the cars, and so they're getting repossessed. And then, of course, our student loans are going bad. And pick the story up there, William.
Yeah. Well, when the student loan goes bad, when you can't pay a student loan, you're in a lot of trouble because they'll send the federal marshals after you. And one of the few growth industries, this is something I also pointed out in previous conversations with the Dr. Stan, over the last 5 or 6 years, we've had static or negative job growth in most areas. Our manufacturing sector is almost completely inert. We've had a literal depression hit Michigan in some of the outlying areas next to Michigan where people are employed or have been employed in the automobile industry. If you go to, for instance, some parts of Indiana, you can find the slop-over effects from what's happened where with GM's travails and some of the other problems that have afflicted the automobile industry. And you really have a situation now where all kinds of damage is being done to every conceivable occupation except for one, and that is the prison industry is booming. One of the few places where there has been very generous job growth has been in the detention sector, where people become prison guards or people become deputy sheriffs who are involved in executing, among other things, foreclosure notices or actually involved in the physical detention of people in county jails. And that's a really dismal harbinger of the type of society we're becoming. So when you have a student loan that goes bad, you find yourself not one step ahead of the collection agency, you're one step ahead of a federal marshal who's likely to throw you in prison if you default on a student loan.
Well, you know, the interesting thing is a lot of these loans were lent out at 3%, 3.5%.
Yeah.
See, that's wonderful. But now suddenly, now those loans are going up to 6% or 7%. And this gets to be approaching the level of usury. And a lot of the students who already have these loans are finding that their loan rates are going up. They didn't count on that. I thought I was going to have 3%. And now they've doubled the interest on a lot of those student loans, and a lot of them are going to go into default.
Yeah, you have teaser rates for student loans that are quite a bit like the come-hither teaser rates you got on credit cards in, say, 2001, 2002, or the same kind of almost irresistibly low rates you'd get on revolving credit accounts. And that was a big growth sector 4 or 5 years ago when you no longer had the proverbial zoot-suited knuckle-dragger in the back alley offering you a loan to go out and place a bet on a basketball game with a really high vig, as they put it, the vigorous being the interest rate. And if you defaulted on that loan, of course, somebody would break your bones. They don't necessarily break your bones, but if you default on a college loan, conceivably you could end up with broken bones because the federal marshals have the prerogative of using physical violence, including lethal violence, to deal with somebody who resists them. It's really interesting. The whole society, as I pointed out, is becoming something of a robber state or a kleptocracy, as the neologism has it. But just a few days ago, George W. Bush was being interviewed on the Today Show, and he was asked about the afflictions that are starting to become obvious in the economy. Once again, bear in mind, when people in the common press and in the so-called mainstream media start talking about something, it's because it's become so obvious that they can't deny it any longer. And so when he was asked on the Today Show if the war had any impact on the economy, it was a really remarkable thing. Well, of course the war is going to have an impact on the economy. They spend $1 trillion on an enterprise of pure consumption and destruction. It's going to have a really negative impact on the economy. But Bush poo-pooed it and smirkingly said something to the effect of, no, actually the war has been good for the economy because we're building equipment, we're hiring people to go out and build equipment. And that's, of course, the purest driven nonsense, because war, once again, doesn't actually add anything to the economy. It's akin to taking a huge amount of capital and simply putting it to the torch. So why is the economy becoming so unfriendly? Well, Mr. Bush said, it's because we built too many houses and we have to shake out the effects of overbuilding the housing sector. And so that really is an interesting measure of Mr. Bush's priorities. You got to understand, this guy calls himself a conservative Republican. He has a Harvard MBA, which means that from some people's point of view, he must know something about business. If you don't learn about business, Harvard's the last place to go. But he thinks that you simply cannot overbuild the destructive capacity of the government. You can overbuild the productive capacity of an economy, but you cannot overbuild the destructive element of a government from Mr. Bush's point of view.
Well, of course, the thing is, Professor Quigley, in his book, Tragedy and Hope, talks about this. He says, you know, the wonderful thing about wars is you can just keep being, you never get too many weapons. If you get too many weapons, you just go ahead and destroy them, and then you can build some more.
Yeah.
That keeps the factories going, and isn't it wonderful? But, of course, no concern at all about the horror and the suffering and all the people are getting killed. It keeps the economy going, but, of course, eventually you get to the point where we are today, where you've run out of money and there's just no way to create any more without destroying the financial base of our nation. Well, William, go right ahead.
Yeah, Professor Quigley's assessment is almost literally what came out of George W. Bush's mouth, making proper allowance for the fact that Mr. Bush is only dubiously literate and can't express concepts as elegantly or with the lapidary eloquence of Professor Quigley. But his point of view was that basically the war has been a positive for the economy. Building too many houses has been a negative for the economy, and really it's the fault of those people who went out sua sponte, I guess, on their own volition, and built these houses for no good reason. And this is just something that happened during Mr. Bush's time in office. He didn't seem to recognize that he had anything to do with this, in spite of the fact that as early as 2002, when it became clear that the Federal Reserve was trying to engineer a huge bubble in the real estate and mortgage sector, Mr. Bush set out, at the direction of his adult handlers, I'm guessing, and started urging people to take out these zero down payment, very low interest rate loans. He made it a priority of his first term to get the FHA and Fannie and Freddie involved in specifically promoting subprime mortgages. He was involved very deeply and very energetically in building up that particular element of the mortgage bubble that was focused on subprime mortgages.
Well, here's the interesting thing is the rationale is that wouldn't it be wonderful for everybody to have the American dream, everybody to have a home, but the reality is a lot of people can't afford a home. They can't afford the payments on it, and they were encouraged, go ahead and buy this house you can't afford. Somehow it's going to work out. Well, unfortunately, it's not working out, and we're seeing the whole implosion of first of all, of the housing market, and then of the rest of the markets all across this country, indeed all across the world, as a direct result of this this utopian dream of everybody's going to have a house, and we're not going to worry how it's going to be paid for. And this really is why we're in so much trouble today, a direct result of encouraging people who could not afford to have a house or a car or all these other things, just to go ahead and buy it. We live in utopia.
Mm-hmm.
There's no tomorrow, but tomorrow has come. And believe me, the skies are gray.
Yeah, it's a peculiar form of very crass intergenerational socialism. We talked about this before. Every time you end up benefiting from largesse created through inflation and deficit spending by the government, every time there's some kind of a benefit, some kind of an entitlement, some kind of a subsidy that is conjured ex nihilo by the federal government and subsidized through inflation by the Federal Reserve.
Hold that thought. We're going to be back here in just a moment with William Grigg. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I'm going to let William go ahead with what he was saying, just talking about the difficulties as far as socialism and this idea that the government's going to help everybody and everything's going to be fine, and of course that's not the way it really works out. No problem facing our society today won't be made worse with a new government policy. But before we go on, I want you to get your blog site out, and I want you to tell our listeners how they can get copies of that great new book you've written, which I'm hoping I'll get one of these days.
Yes. you should have that delivered in quantity. The book, of course, is entitled Liberty in Eclipse, The War on Terror and the Rise of the Homeland Security State. And you should have that in your possession by next Wednesday.
Oh, wonderful. Well, tell our listeners how they can get them through you.
The easiest way to get a copy of the book is to go to the website of the Welch Foundation, which is called The Right Source. It's an information portal, a place where we post news and commentary articles, as well as the occasional video or audio file. And to get to The Right Source, go to www.rightsourceonline.com. It's one word. RightSourceOnline.com. At the top of the page, when you get to the homepage of The Right Source, there's a banner ad with a photograph of the cover of my book, and there's a place where you can click through to order it directly from The Right Source and to pay for it via PayPal, which is a secure ordering arrangement, as well as if you go to The Right Source website, you scroll down the front page of The Right Source, and you look on the left-hand border, about a third of the way down the page, you'll find my photograph. There will be a link there to my daily blog, which is entitled Pro Libertate, the Latin phrase that means for freedom. I try to publish between 3 and 5 times a week, depending upon the vicissitudes of my schedule. I've got 5 small children I have to take care of right now by myself, and so obviously there are contending their contending parties where the where the allocation of my time would be concerned. But I try to publish between 3 and 5 times a week, and rather than putting up brief smatterings of thoughts on various transitory issues, I try to work out a fairly lengthy essay on a given theme, between 1,200 and a couple of thousand words. Last week I published a 3,000-word piece that reviews and talks about a very neglected common law right that has actually gotten some attention in recent years in law review articles and also in some state Supreme Court decisions. That is the right of individuals to resist unlawful arrest. People have got the idea that we simply have to comply, and it's a good idea in most circumstances, including circumstances that involve an unlawful imposition. It's a good idea to comply with a police officer. I mean, it is, if you will, sort of a just war principle type question. Would it be worthwhile to resist knowing that you're going to be involved in a physical confrontation with an armed person who specializes in physical confrontations? But there are some circumstances, and I actually describe one at the end of this essay, in which it is not only the morally and constitutionally and common law right thing to do, it's also the practical thing to do. I describe, just by way of a brief digression here, I describe a circumstance, a situation that occurred in Missouri a number of years ago where there was an accident on an interstate, and the firemen showed up, the local fire rescue personnel showed up to tend to the injuries of a guy who'd gotten very, very badly hurt in a collision at which he was not at fault out there on the interstate outside of the town of Missouri. And they parked the fire truck in such a way as to obstruct traffic in order to shield the rescue workers as they ministered to this poor man who'd been in the wreck. The police showed up, and one of them decided that he was going to order the firemen to move their truck out of the lane where it was obstructing traffic. And the firemen were under orders from their superiors to use the fire truck to shield them so that they'd be able to expedite the treatment of this fellow. And the policeman said, well, you're going to move this or somebody's going to get arrested. And so when the fireman refused to cooperate, the police officer grabbed the on-scene commander of the fire unit and slapped the handcuffs on him and took him away. Now, at that point, that's a really good example of what I'm talking about. Those firemen should have resisted that arrest. They should have said, just stay right here. Get your hands off this guy. Call your superiors. We call our superiors, we'll get this nailed down, but just put it in neutral for a while and let us tend to the injuries of this badly injured man. A really good example of what I'm talking about. Turns out, the police officer now has to pay something like an $18,000 fine and legal judgment for unlawfully arresting that fire captain. But it would have been better for everybody, including the poor schlep who was in the car waiting to be tended to by the emergency personnel, if they would have resisted that arrest at the point of the actual infraction. But that's an example of the sort of thing I talk about at length in the Pro Libertate blog. And once again, to get there, go to www.rightsourceonline.com. You can get access to my blog. You can read the news articles that we post, the commentaries that we glean for your benefit, as well as order my book.
Okay, fine. And again, that book is the title.
Liberty in Eclipse, The War on Terror and the Rise of the Homeland Security State.
All right, fine. Well, of course, before we got onto this subject, you were talking already about the problems that come, you know, with government trying to help people. Oh, my goodness, we're from the government. We want to provide for the people. They don't have a home. Everybody's going to have a home. Isn't that the American dream? And so let's get everybody to go out and buy a home they can't afford and buy a truck they can't afford, because mm-hmm. What's wrong with people having a truck? And of course, all these things that have been done, of course, we're very stimulating to the economy. We had a great ride as the bubble was going up, but now the bubble has burst. We're just cascading down, and of course, it seems to be no place we're going to stop until we get to total destruction. Go right ahead.
I'm afraid you're right. I mean, like you say, it's a very nice ride, but gravity does work. Gravity is a very harsh mistress. It will claim its own, and it's claiming its own, and we're learning something about the economic equivalent of the law of the acceleration of gravity, which is to say, you know, it can get really messy as a falling object approaches a hard surface, and there's not going to be a soft landing here. When you talk about this thing we call money, all money represents something that is exchanged for time. And at some point, time has to be invested in order to earn whatever quantity of money we receive. if that money is given to us by government in the form of redistributed wealth, we're stealing somebody else's life and livelihood. And so when the government forcibly extracts from one party to give to another, the government is really stealing the life of the people who are on the donor side of this equation, if you will, which is one reason why this is so consummately evil. You're taking from that person something that cannot be replaced. Now, when we talk about the government spending into deficit, it's borrowing time from the future, and it's stealing from the lives of people yet to be born, for the most part, or people who are born who have not yet begun their productive life as economic producers. And so when we have the government fund through deficit spending a program that puts immediate wealth into the hands, that is to say plundered wealth, into the hands of people now living, they're stealing from the future. It's a type of transgenerational socialism. And it's another type of redistribution as well, because this is all funded through inflation in the immediate term. And inflation means that we are stealing right now from the value of all the money that we earn, from every dollar that we earn or that we try to save right now. So it actually is a double dip. You're stealing from people now living through inflation, and that means, of course, you're depleting your own immediate wealth, and you're also stealing from the future because you're putting IOUs in the kitty that are going to have to be indemnified by generations yet to be born or young people who have yet to begin working. And there's another way that this has actually become sort of a triple dip, if you will, and that is that a lot of these bonds, these IOUs, are being backed by foreign creditors, foreign investors, who now have access through the IOUs we've written. They now have access to our country to start strip mining it directly, and so they're really starting to steal from the infrastructure that we have built. Now, steal is the wrong word. They're starting to buy the infrastructure that we have built, and they are starting to buy up the raw land and other resources, the mineral wealth and the energy wealth of our country, and many other places. There are many other assets that our country has. In order to make good the IOUs that have been put out there, in the form of T-bills and other bonds that our governments, plural, the federal government, state and local governments as well, they've issued these bonds as a way to pay for their largesse, their corrupt largesse. So really, when you take a look at it, we're getting a lose-lose-lose proposition out of this. It's a form of stealing from our children and our grandchildren. It's a form of stealing the wealth of people who are currently working and savers who have worked and earned and saved with a great deal of discipline. And it's also a way of losing the very physical patrimony of our country, because we're leaving ourselves open right now to the prospect of being literally plucked dry by people who are holding our IOUs. And this is all coming to a head right now, and this is all a result of the collapse not only of the immediate bubble we're talking about, the mortgage refinancing bubble, the big debt bubble of the early years of the 21st century, but really it's, I think, the consummation of that process that began in 1913 with the creation of the Federal Reserve, the official counterfeiting arm of the regime that rules us. And at some point there has to be a day of reckoning. There are two books out by that title. They're both very much worth reading. The most recent one is by Patrick Buchanan, but there was an earlier one by, I believe, Addison Wiggin and Bill Bonner that talk about the same thing, and that is eventually there has to be a reckoning for decades of better living through inflation and other forms of official profligacy. And it is our rather unfortunate hap to be living when that reckoning is likely to come due. And so life is going to become really stimulating, I believe, in the next year, year and a half or so. And it's already started to become such. We take a look at the way the precious metals markets are reacting right now. Gold over $900, silver over $18. We're likely to see $1,000 gold before the end of the spring. We're likely to see silver up over $20, $22, $23, $24 most likely. I mean, the people making a flight into a permanent store of value because of the decrepitude of the dollar. Euros being accepted by street vendors and storefront merchants in Manhattan. We've never seen a spectacle like that. And the euro itself being so much stronger than the dollar is such an indictment of our own socialist government, because the euro, once again, is a fiat currency issued by a consortium of socialist governments in Europe. And so really, when you take a look at it, we're at a point now where we're going to become disillusioned in the literal sense of that expression. The illusions that have comforted us now are being dissipated. We're finding out that we're a much poorer country than we thought we were. That's a really scary prospect.
Well, of course, the thing that really concerns me with him is the fact that the dollar is going to lose its position as the reserve currency of the world, and all of those trillions of dollars that are out there throughout the world are suddenly going to begin cascading back here into this country and leading to an inflationary spiral that will destroy the life savings of so many of our people. This is what really is in the offing, and nobody wants to talk about that. But once we lose our reserve status, and believe me, we're under attack from Iran and from Venezuela, and it may very well be that the oil-producing states will very, very soon start using a basket of currencies rather than the dollar to purchase oil with. And when that happens and people begin to lose confidence in the dollar throughout the world, and then they start to dump their dollars, and may God have mercy on this country.
The Iranians just opened up their oil berth, if I remember correctly, just in the last week or so.
Right.
And that's an oil commodities market that does not accept dollars. It accepts euro and, I believe, yen and a couple of other currencies, but they don't accept dollars. That's the sort of thing that is likely to become contagious because people want to move away from the dollar. The Gulf Cooperation Council has been talking for months now about the idea of doing away with the dollar peg because a lot of the countries in the Persian Gulf region that are part of the Gulf Cooperation Council just simply cannot maintain that dollar peg. They're under extraordinary pressure from their own domestic business sector to do something about this arrangement, which is doing them no good.
Well, of course, what it's doing is producing inflation in their countries.
Yeah, exactly.
And of course,
they're eating our inflation.
Unrest.
Yeah. They don't want to be importing our inflation any longer. And as soon as they can find a way not to, they'll stop importing our inflation, which means, of course, we're going to have to start absorbing that. The other thing I think is really interesting, we talked about this before, too, was what happened last September and the process that it began, which was consummated last Sunday, and that was the failure of the Northern Rock Bank in England. You had the bank run begin, or I think it was around September 12th of last year, when the Northern Rock Bank, I believe it's England's fifth largest mortgage lender, they had about, I think, 800,000 mortgages in circulation. They applied to the Bank of England because they were facing, of course, a liquidity crunch, and the Bank of England was willing to back them up with its full faith and credit, which is to say, as a central bank, they were putting the taxpayers of England on the hook on behalf of Northern Rock Bank. Well, the news leaked out, and this arrangement was made to prevent a bank run, and of course it precipitated when you had over $4 billion withdrawn from that bank over the course of one weekend last September, before the government moved in and said that it would guarantee the deposits, and the police moved in and dispersed the crowds of people who had lined up to take out their savings. And the interviews of people, the common man and woman on the street who had lined up to get their deposits out of the bank, were really quite revealing. One of them said, well, we've been told that everything's under control and there's no cause for alarm, but that's what the captain of the Titanic said, too. Another one said, asked if he was acting in a panicky way, said, no, I'm acting in a completely rational way. I mean, how am I supposed to react when there's every reason to think that this bank is going to fail and take my deposits, my life savings down with it? Well, just last Sunday, the government in Great Britain nationalized the Northern Rock Bank, and it did so because a bid by Virgin International, Rich Branson's group, fell through, in spite of the fact that he was promised some very generous subsidies by the British government, and also Citigroup was involved in that mix as a guarantor of the deal. And Citigroup, of course, right now is all but crippled itself. It's only operating right now because it got an infusion of cash from the United Arab Emirates. And so this is a really good illustration of how quickly these things can propagate themselves. And if you take a look at what's going on in Germany right now, that's another part of this whole story that I just wrote about today, as a matter of fact, in my Pro Libertate blog. In Germany, you've got all these government-owned or government-subsidized, government-controlled banks that were involved in doing what? They were buying into the bond market in the subprime mortgage sector here in the United States. Why were they able to do this? Well, because they had the backing of the German government, which meant that they could go out and shoot craps in the subprime mortgage market here in the United States with the serene confidence that somebody else was going to end up paying for their foolishness. Now, you've got all these banks in Germany that are ready to start failing, and once one of them goes, they're all going to go down together because they are all completely interconnected. I mean, the relationship between those banks and the political sector in Germany is utterly incestuous. I mean, we're talking incestuous like the Ptolemies of Egypt were incestuous. I mean, there is simply no separation between the government and the banking sector in Germany. And when one of those banks goes down, it'll drag them all down. Think of a line of alpine mountain climbers who are going up the Matterhorn. And at the top, one of them loses his footing, and the batons start popping out of the mountainside. That's what the banking sector is going to look like in Germany. And when they go down, chances are they're going to create a huge vortex that's going to take down the global banking system with them.
And, of course, there, the stockholders in Northern Rock Bank there in England, they've lost all their equity.
Exactly.
And people are saying, well, but you know, we were invested in the bank, and that's sorry, the stock is really becoming increasingly worthless, and I think we can see the same thing happen in financial institutions throughout the world. We're on the edge of the precipice, and, well, we've already started to fall. We'll be back in just a moment with William Grigg to wrap up tonight's program. We'll go right ahead.
I do think that probably when the most recent batch, or the next batch, I should say, of adjustable rate mortgages or ARMs start resetting in April, we're going to see some really cataclysmic damage start to register in the markets. There's this effort on the part of the people who are running our system right now to convince the public that as long as the stock market looks healthy, the economy must be healthy. And, of course, it doesn't follow from that. The investor class in the Wall Street, in the Dow, they're people who are politically connected and politically privileged. And, of course, as you pointed out, I don't know if you pointed this out, Dr. Stan, but they do change up the Dow Jones. They end up dropping people off, dropping companies off and bringing companies on so as to maintain this illusion of health. It's not at all representative of the way the economy is doing. And the reason why the Dow is doing so well is that all this money, all this capital is being made available to investors in order to keep the Dow healthy. But at some point, reality has to assert itself, and it generally does so in the ugliest possible way. And I believe that when we say a farewell to ARMs, as it were, in April of this year, that things are going to start looking very bleak and very ugly indeed. April is likely to be the cruelest month in terms of the cloudburst that the gray skies you referred to augurs for our country and our economy. And so people need to be ready for this. They need to be psychologically ready. They need to be spiritually ready. They need to take what precautions they can in order to protect their earnings, their assets. That means, in my case, I'm going to start investing in the three noble metals. To the extent that I'm able to, given my straitened circumstances, the three noble metals are gold, silver, and lead. It's also a good idea to be able to be somewhat autonomous in terms of your immediate needs. If there's a disruption in the retail food chain, you need to be able to provide for your family. And that's one of the reasons, quite frankly, I thought it was worthwhile a few years ago to move my family out here to Idaho, where we could cluster together with my parents and some of our extended family to look after each other. We're in for some soul-shaking times of a sort we've not seen here in this country for generations. But my hope is that the resilient decency of our country and that the ingenuity and discipline of Americans will assert themselves and will start asking the tough questions and confronting them unflinchingly. We'll work together to restore what's been taken from us.
And of course, what you and I are doing today is planting those ideas in people's minds, and hopefully when things really get bad, they're going to remember what you said, what we said, and hopefully why, of course, we won't lose America.
Yeah, exactly right.
We're out of time, William. God bless you. Thanks so very much.
God bless.
Bye-bye. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I hope you enjoyed our conversation with William Grigg. You know, we do talk during the commercials, and if you'd like to get a tape of the program, give us a call at 1-888-1-800-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And I really believe William is one of the most brilliant speakers we have. We have several people we have on every month, and each one of them has their own strengths, and William is certain we have with him every week, usually in the afternoon and the evening. I hope you enjoy his commentary. I think it is very apropos of what's going on today, because we are certainly already falling into the precipice. The only question is, how far down we're going to go. For those of you who, of course, have not yet seen my talk on the financial tsunami, let me recommend it to you. It's a DVD or a video, and then, of course, there's a syllabus that goes with that. You must understand what's going on to begin to make your preparations for the difficult times that lie ahead. I know a lot of our listeners have, but if you have not, it's still not too late. Don't put it off. You need, of course, to have your emergency food supplies. You need to get out of debt. You should be laying in what you can financially in the way of the precious metals, because at least they'll have some value. They may not increase in value, but at least you won't lose everything like the people who are tied to the dollar or to fixed assets, annuities. There certainly is a disaster. Pensions, insurance policies, they're all denominated in dollars, CDs, bonds, savings accounts. There are assured certificates of confiscation. Confiscation through inflation, which is going to increase ever more rapidly, at least in the next year or two. And then I just hope and pray that they stop inflating and contract the money supply. And even though it'll create terrible, terrible suffering, it'll save at least some of the savings, the life savings of so many Americans. If not, we'll simply go into an inflationary spiral, and everything that most Americans have will become simply a remembrance of things past. Now, how do we really understand what's going on? Well, of course, the other books, The Federal Reserve Conspiracy, Fiat Money and Inflation in France, my little pamphlets on the history of money and financial meltdown will give you information, and if you read all of them, you'll be smarter than most college professors. We have a four CD set on the financial meltdown, interviews with various people on the subject we're talking about tonight, and then to put things into their spiritual perspective, because you cannot understand what's going on unless you understand the spiritual forces at work. Certainly are my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, my talk on the Forbidden Secret, and then, of course, we have the four-tape or CD set, The Secret Behind the Secret. We have the very professional videos of The Secret Mystery of America's Beginning, put out by our good friend Chris Pinto, The Secret Mystery of America's Beginning, and then the second in the series, Riddles in Stone, The Secret Architecture of Our Nation's Capital. And then, of course, the two other very important DVDs that we've actually produced. One is Chris Pinto giving a talk to our audience about 2 years ago at our annual convention, The Atlantis Connection. What does lost Atlantis have to do with what's going on today? Everything. Because the people in charge look upon America as the new Atlantis. And as Atlantis of old led the world, so America is going to lead the world into the new world order, the new world religion, with the new world leader. And then, of course, the other DVD is Constance Cumby's talk on the emergence, the coming of the world leader. And, of course, Constance is really the world's expert on this world Luciferian movement, and you'll be fascinated as you hear her give the talk. We have a four-tape set by interviews with Constance Cumby. If you'd like more information, why, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. And, of course, we hope if you'd like to, you'll get the material. If you'd like to get a free catalog or a free newsletter, you can always give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like a health catalog or certainly one of our catalogs on emergency food and emergency supplies, 1-800-544-8927. Please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection.